From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
San Jose, South San Jose.
Coming up, we check in on the future of City College of San Francisco.
Who would go to a school that could close at any minute?
Then we'll hear what it takes to organize some of Broadway's largest costumes.
We have about 2 minutes to put each boy in a cupcake, and then to get him out of a cupcake, some of them are really fast and they only have about 30 seconds.
And we'll learn how one of San Francisco's oldest cultural institutions continues to thrive.
You feel like you're in the right place if you see a drag queen somewhere. You're like, oh, gays are here. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, we know what you mean. It's Cross Currents. City College of San Francisco remains open and accredited, even though it's slated to lose its accreditation next year. Many people who care about the school aren't letting it go down without a fight. Earlier this week, 26 people were arrested as students and protesters rallied at City Hall demanding to speak with Mayor Ed Lee. He declined. And just this morning, City Attorney Dennis Herrera filed a lawsuit against the accreditation agency ACCJC, saying it misused its authority. The suit seeks to block the closure of CCSF. A lot has happened since July 3rd, when the Accrediting Commission handed down its decision. The CCSF board was stripped of its decision-making power, and the U.S. Department of Education is investigating how the Accrediting Commission itself does business. To make sense of all of this, KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with San Francisco Chronicle higher education reporter Nanette Asimov. He started by asking her about the special trustee appointed to unilateral control over City College of San Francisco, a man named Robert Agrella.
He was a community college chancellor in Sonoma County for many years, and he has spent the last year advising City College of San Francisco. And there was a huge protest at the time. His title was special trustee, but he hadn't yet gotten his extraordinary powers, which basically means he unilaterally makes decisions about the college now. So there's no more public board meetings. You know, you get an agenda, and it's really going to be a list of items that Robert Agrella gets to check off and whatever he wants to approve or disapprove. And I talked to him. He spends his day with even bigger checklists and trying to get things done that will keep the college accredited. It's unclear if he'll be successful.
Well, what are some of the consequences, or for that matter, what are some of the benefits of having somebody with such unilateral power over such an enormous institution?
Right. It is an enormous institution. There's like 85,000 full and part-time people who come and go throughout the year. I think the state's thought, because he is state appointed, is that having one person will speed things up. So instead of having...
No matter what direction that is.
No matter what direction that is. Well, but they hope it's the direction of whatever the Accrediting Commission wants, this non-public commission that is, you know, not beloved by many, many faculty and colleges. But still, they are the umpire, and so the college has to do what they want. And Robert Agrella is looking at a list that the Accrediting Commission gave the college a year ago and said, these are your deficiencies, fix them. The way the college assigns classes, how many students will be in those classes, how many, you know, what they're going to offer, and matching that up with state finances and all along those kinds of things. They don't even force students at registration to pay for their classes. This has been a big issue because they lose like $400,000 a year on this. So that has to be fixed up. That was identified a year ago as a big problem. They're supposed to charge, obviously, but they don't. So things like that.
Robert Agrella issued a statement, a video statement, at the end of last month that I want to give a quick listen to because in it he kind of outlines how he sees the situation right now with the Accrediting Commission. Let's take a listen to that.
The most important thing we can do to achieve success is to agree to work together to meet the standards of the Accrediting Commission. I'm well aware of the concerns that have been expressed about regional accreditation. This is a debate that has many facets, but if City College of San Francisco remains the battlefield for this fight, we will not survive. City College's job, our only job, is to fully meet the standards that are being followed by the other 111 community colleges in California.
That's Robert Agrella, the special trustee with extraordinary powers, and he's essentially saying that they really need to address all these concerns that were raised and play ball. Now, if these formal challenges filed by the unions, the California Teachers Federation, concerning the accreditation board, if those find that their techniques were faulty, is there a chance that this loss of accreditation for the City College could just disappear?
I think that is what the faculty union who filed these complaints really hoped. But we learned the other day that the answer is no. My understanding is that the only way that it would reverse, that a negative ruling would reverse any decisions on colleges, would be if the U.S. Department of Education took the extraordinary position of revoking the accrediting commission's recognition. Seems unlikely. And without that, I think the work that the commission does evidently still stands.
So at this point, looking forward, CCSF's appeal of the loss of accreditation to take place in 2014, when would they find out if that appeal would have worked?
Well, that's interesting because when the question of an appeal first came up in July, we were told that that appeal could actually take longer or go beyond the date of revocation. So the actual date of revocation is supposed to be July 31st, 2014. But if the appeal process is still going through its motions, it could extend that. What that means for whether classes would open in, you know, fall 2014 is anybody's guess. I don't know who would go to a school that could close at any minute.
That was Nanette Asimov, higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. You can find an extended version of that conversation, plus a link to Special Trustee Robert Agrella's public statement regarding accreditation at our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. If keeping track of the accreditation requirements seems daunting to you, how about cataloging and grooming over 500 of the brightest and most intricate costumes that Broadway has to offer? Yes, that's the job of a wardrobe supervisor, and perhaps the most glamorous job in that industry belongs to Jillian Austin, who keeps Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, looking good. The musical about road-tripping drag queens is on a national tour, and it's playing at San Francisco's Orpheum Theater. Austin took some time to enlighten us on what it takes to keep so many sequins in check.
Yeah, my name is Jillian Austin, and I am the wardrobe supervisor for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the first national tour. It's hard to say exactly, but between all the shoes, all the hats, all the garments, all the undergarments, like tights and underwear and such, we're over about 1,000 pieces. The one catch with our show is that we have a lot of really large pieces and really crazy pieces that you don't normally see, that people wouldn't normally consider a costume. My favorite costume in the show and one of our crazier and more famous costumes are our cupcakes. So we have six basically 8-foot tall neon green cupcake costumes, and the cupcakes themselves are constructed out of foam rubber, and they have bodices and skirts. The surface of them are rubbery looking to make it look more like frosting. The cupcake paper cup is made out of cloth blind material, like horizontal blinds, which have a pleat so they look like paper. And each cupcake dancer is wearing a 2-foot-tall candle headdress, which lights up to make it look like the candle's burning. And with the heels and headdresses, each boy is about 8 feet tall when he goes out on stage. We have to get them dressed. And also, it's not very easy for someone to walk around in a cupcake costume that's about 5 feet wide. So the boys come to us, and then we dress them. And then when they exit the stage, we undress them.
Action!
We have about 2 minutes to put each boy in a cupcake, and then to get them out of a cupcake. Some of them are really fast, and they only have about 30 seconds. There are a lot of fast changes in our show. We have a lot of costumes, and some of our actors have as many as 20 different costumes. There are a lot of great secret inside jokes with the costumes of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Like our Go West number, there'll be, you know, some supporting characters, like just some waiters and waitresses who are in secret drag. So there'll be men dressed as women or women dressed as men. One of my favorite bits is we have the village people who originally, you know, perform Go West, who are secretly hidden among the ensemble dancers. So you'll see the police officer, the construction worker, the Indian chief, and, you know, other members of the village people, depending on who's on that night. So you'll see them dancing along with all the cowboys and cowgirls during Go West. My favorite Priscilla song is probably the finale because it's a combination of all the songs. Also, it's kind of funny because it is kind of a hard show costume-wise, and so they're singing, you know, finally, you come along the way. Finally, we're all like, oh, finally. You know, we're done.
That was Jillian Austin, wardrobe supervisor for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. You can see all of the 500-plus Tony Award-winning costumes she curates on stage at the Orpheum in San Francisco from now until August 31st. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Many of us don't need to look to Broadway for drag inspiration. Here in San Francisco, we boast a drag culture that transcends generations as easily as genders. One of the icons of that world is Glamamore, known in her community as Grandmother, probably because she's been performing for over 30 years.
Even if you don't like drag queens, I think, like, you feel like you're in the right place if you see a drag queen somewhere. You're like, oh, gays are here. Do you know what I mean? There's somebody that will probably understand me on some level. Yeah, we're like lighthouses, I guess, for the gay communities. I think we always have been. We stick out.
And in the Bay Area, the entire drag community is sticking out more and more lately. Last week alone, there were over a half dozen drag events right here in San Francisco. KALW's Daniel Moore was able to catch up with Glamamore this past week for a behind-the-scenes look at the city's thriving drag culture. And a note to our listeners, this piece does contain adult material.
All right, so we're going to bring back to the stage a couple numbers for you guys back to back. Without any further ado, let's go ahead and hear it for Glamamore and Queen!
Well, let's see. Glamamore, who is she? Sort of always been a dykey drag queen. Even when I'm, like, you know, when I'm all gussied up, hair, nails, and everything, I still always, like, I was like, Glamamore is definitely abroad.
Help me!
Pull it.
You love my outfit?
Hey. Thank you. Pull the pants down. Somebody take my pants off.
Little 50s Vegas-y or a borscht belt kind of style.
I hate when he says that to me.
Cantankerous, definitely.
There you go. Don't be cute. Pump's over there.
kick you if I have to. Like, don't make fun of me, let me make fun of me. So that's Glamour.
So tonight we're doing all duets. All duets with the grandmother of something, Glamour. And she has been working her ass off all week, getting these costumes, getting the numbers together, making sure everybody's together. So without any further ado, let's bring to the stage my grandmother, Glamour!
If I'm going through the process of putting on hair and makeup and all of these things, well, there is a moment just when I'm finishing the end of my lipstick where I'm like, oh, there she is, and I see it. But, like, my whole rest of my face could be painted for hours, but no, there is a moment that where that last piece of makeup goes on, and it's like, ooh, there it is. When I put on a gown or something, like, I've never really felt like I was a woman. Like, I will never know what that actually feels like, because I am not. I love my penis. There are people who do drag, and it is more attached to their gender identity. For me, whether I'm putting on pants or a skirt, I never feel this magical sex change. Although I do, like, you know, like in years past, I've called it, like, you know, the power of the breast once I put my tits in. Glamour can get away with a lot more stuff than I would ever do as my David part. There is, like, again, the power of the breast. Like, I, you know, you can magically be able to tell any group of big truckers to go f*** themselves when you're in drag. Sometimes I don't suggest it. It has happened before in my life where I have wound up in doing that, and I would never do that as David. So maybe there's, like, this amount of boldness that occurs when Glamour, when I'm doing Glamour as opposed to David, who I'm, like, also, I'm very, like, by nature, I think I'm very, like, decidedly introverted. People don't understand that, because on stage I'm like a hog. They used to call me the hog queen of lip sync, and that is true. It's like I am volcanic on stage, and off stage I'm rather quiet, and I keep to myself a lot, drink coffee, smoke my cigarettes, make stuff. So there is that difference, definitely.
So after this next number, we're going to take a brief little break, but come back. Hey, over here, too much laughing. So after this number, we're going to take a little break, then you guys can laugh and kiki la la all you want outside, and then we're going to do another show. So, yeah, I like that enthusiasm. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and have our last number. Performances by Glamour and drama, Bin Laden.
For me, at least, that being true to yourself and your relationship with the world, as in being a good anything, you have to be in it. You have to be, put yourself in it, heart in it, soul in it, mind in it, body in it, be in it. That, to me, is a good drag queen. I don't particularly care what you look like. Be it.
That was drag queen Glamour, also known as Grandmother. The other voice you heard was Dulce de Leche, who served as master of ceremonies at the weekly drag event Something last Friday at the Stud in San Francisco. That story was produced by KLW's Daniel Moore.
And the burning bed flows higher, and she's free to fly.
Drag culture might not exist, certainly not in its present form, if not for Jose Saria, who died Monday at age 90.
I don't want to be remembered for superficial things. I want to be remembered for the good things that I did, what I promoted, how I united the city that I love.
Harvey Milk is remembered as the first openly gay candidate to be elected to San Francisco's Board of Supervisors in 1977, but it's Soria who's recognized as the first openly gay person to run for any political office back in 1961. 4 years later, Soria founded the Imperial Court de San Francisco with the self-proclaimed title, Her Royal Majesty Empress of San Francisco, Jose I, the Widow Norton. The Imperial Court, now called the International Court System, is a worldwide organization with more than 65 chapters, all dedicated to fundraising and community service, along with having a good time. He was a regular performer at San Francisco's Black Cat Club in the 1950s and 60s and urged patrons to come out of the closet and be proud to be gay. "United we stand," he advised. "Divided, they catch us one by one."
We live a very short time, so make the most of it.
A public funeral is being organized after Labor Day. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound. We asked what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. We sent KALW's Christina Loring to the skies and an island to get the answer for this week's audiograph mystery sound.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Alcatraz, the most infamous island in the world.
Alcatraz is layers and layers of stories.
My name is Park Ranger Benny Batem. I work for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area here in Alcatraz Island. In the early days of the prison, is the prisoners saw the Golden Gate Bridge being built. Imagine looking out and seeing, you know, what was going on out there, and they were seeing all this progress taking place and time kind of standing still. And here, as they're doing time here on Alcatraz, when the sound was just right, you could hear people. You could hear parties at the yacht club. They talk about hearing parties at the yacht club during New Year's Eve. Fourth of July. I mean, everything that you were missing was right out there. Of course, the predominant sound we hear right now, the birds. To catch that bubbling sound that they make. That That's the egret, snow egret, but it's kind of what we call, I think it's called bubbling, but it's just the sound that they make, and it's just kind of a unique sound. What I like doing is I'll sometimes be walking through here and visitors are walking by and they don't see any of the birds and they hear that sound. They're like, "What's that sound?"
It sounds like it's going to be like a wombat.
Yeah, something like a monkey or something. You know, something that's, they don't, you wouldn't connect that with a bird, you know. And what's really interesting is a lot of people don't come out here because it's not connected with the prison. So a few people walk through here, but it's such a kind of a quiet space here and kind of a, kind of isolated, unique, little special place of the island. And if you took a picture of what we're looking at here in the sound, you wouldn't connect that with Alcatraz.
Well, one of you knew exactly what that was. Congratulations, Yana Solberg. You're our winner this week, and we're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For those of you who just can't wait until next week's Mystery Sound, you can find Audiograph live in San Francisco this weekend at the California Historical Society. They'll be presenting more stories behind some of their signature sounds, as well as chances for prizes and even some sea shanty sing-alongs. You can join the party this Saturday, August 24th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the California Historical Society, located at 678 Mission Street in San Francisco. For more details, go to klw.org. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Linda Jew, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daniel Moore, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. This is Aram Shelton's newest group, Ton Trio 2. Shelton is a jazz saxophonist and composer living in Oakland. He provides space for improvisation within his written frameworks, as you're hearing now. Ton Trio 2 will be performing next Monday at Duende in Oakland, starting at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.